This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Anderson Hospital, a Newsweek World's Best Hospital. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Oh, baby, it is the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji today until 1 o'clock. And we appreciate you being a part of this show today in the Gas House Gang every weekday from 12 until 1. Here's how you visit with us at 314-436-7900. Go ahead and text in with your comments, questions for Bernie or for me. Also, if you want to, you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter and leave your comments and questions there as well. We're at KMOX Sports. So, Bernie, second to last series of the season for the Cardinals at home is over. They'll have their final home series starting tomorrow against the Milwaukee Brewers. And you know, going into that series, it's just it's really difficult to swallow the fact, at least for me anyway. And it's mostly because I had counted out Milwaukee a couple of months ago. I said they were done. You know, don't worry about this team. They're cooked. And it turns out they're not. They are very likely going to win the division. So this is, it's weird to have this series for a team comfortably in first place and in the playoffs. I don't know if Bernie can hear us at the moment, but we'll, is he with us?
Okay. I can hear you. Oh. I can hear you, but I am having technical difficulties on the visual side of this, which will be taken care of momentarily. I apologize.
No worries. Nobody needs to look at us anyway. I mean, you can if you want to, but you know what I mean, Bernie? This is it. You know, I know the Cardinals are in a different position and runway, learn about the young players. This wasn't supposed to be a playoff season anyway, but here are the Brewers who continuously find ways to do it. And even when you think they are done, they just aren't.
Well, they have the smartest they have the smartest front office in baseball. And the problem with all of us is that we look at the roster before the season and, you know, we see, well, there's nothing special about that roster, which is exactly the point of why the front office is brilliant. They find values. They find players that other teams overlook or underestimate. And then they spend their money wisely, and they seem to have a player that fits any role that's, they need help in, and they're just always stealth because they don't make the big brassy moves. They don't, you know, have people gushing about them. People look at the payroll size and say, "Oh, there's just no way they can keep doing this." They look at the rosters, "Oh, there's no way they can keep doing this." But they've been doing it really since 2017, and they're just incredibly bright. They're smarter than the rest, and it's an amazing story, really. So. But I got to tell you, man, Ronj, I wouldn't beat yourself up too much because I was on to the Brewers, and I've been talking about the Brewers for years now about, hey, don't ever count them out. They're smart. But even I was like, I don't think this is the year. I think this is finally catches up to them this year. So, but here they go again. I was already a believer, but even I doubted them before 2025.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's amazing what they've done, and it's really hard to look at them and not feel a little jealous about the way they've gone about business and the fact that they've been as competitive as they had with a fairly limited payroll, and then think that's what the Cardinals used to be. You know, that's what they were. They were the team that people used to look at and say, "How is this team doing it?"
Well, there always was, especially in the kind of the baseball analytics people, they would always refer to the Cardinal, you know, having this devil magic. Like, what? Mm-hmm. Where do they come up with these things? How do they keep finding answers? Like, who are these players? And so it became known as devil magic. And it's something I wrote last year. The Brewers have, in effect, stolen the devil magic away from the Cardinals. You know, they have the devil magic, and they've had it since. Even though in 2017 they were 10 games over 500, they didn't make the playoffs. But, you know, this will be since 2018, they've missed the playoffs one time. So the devil magic is definitely with them.
it's really something. So that series is going to start tomorrow at Busch Stadium, and it's the final series at Busch for the 2025 season, barring some sort of miraculous turnaround, and the Cardinals will need just a ton of help. And, you know, as we look at the playoff picture, which is starting to, you know, solidify a little bit, at least we know some of the teams that are in. The Phillies are in, the Cubs are in. Is there a team that you like going into the postseason that you think we really need to be on the lookout for?
I don't have an opinion on it, and maybe it's because I've been my mind has been reset a little bit, and I'll explain briefly. There's a baseball analyst I've known for a long time, and he sort of broke the mold on this. He did a study. His name's Jay Jaffe at FanGraphs.
Yep, I know Jay.
He did a study where he basically shot down conclusively. I mean, blew it to smithereens. This theory, for example, that the way you perform in September going into the playoffs has nothing to do with how you will do in the playoffs, whether you had a great September or a terrible September. And I know that in the past, I've been really guilty of thinking like, well, boy, watch out for this team. I know they barely got in, but they're really dangerous. I think everybody's dangerous because, you know, the field is more wide open than usual. And I think most people will still think the Dodgers with that huge payroll and their starting pitching's back in order, you know, that they're going to be very dangerous to beat. But I don't know. I mean, I keep trying to think of a team that I'm really looking at that's not the obvious type of team that to go a long way. And I'm just not there yet. I'm just not there yet because a part of it is seeing the health of each roster. But I think there's a lot of dangerous teams this year. I really do. That's a cop-out answer, but that's how I feel.
There are three teams that have already clinched their spot in the postseason. Eight teams have been eliminated. No American League teams have clinched a postseason spot yet. So a lot of that is still pretty wide open. Maybe not wide, but some of it is still open, and a lot of moving parts can happen. And we had this conversation, Bernie, Matt Pauly, who was on the show, on the Chris and Amy show prior to this, and we were talking about how the Cardinals operate and how things might look a little different with the Chaim Bloom as the president of baseball operations moving forward. And the one philosophy that has always sort of bothered me when it came to the Cardinals was this idea, and they spoke it a lot, that all you got to do is get to the playoffs. Get to the playoffs and anything can happen. And while there is variance in the playoffs, sometimes weird things happen. Sometimes the best team in the league loses in the division series. Sometimes that happens in a short three-game series.
Right.
It isn't the way to operate. It has worked for them in the past. They have won World Series by doing it, but I never really liked the process. I never really liked the process of, oh, all you have to do is just be good enough to win your division and then we'll go from there. I have always thought that you should remove as much margin of error as possible or lower that margin as much as you possibly can going into the postseason.
No, I agree with you. But even then, there's a lot of randomness baked into the postseason. Look at the Arizona Diamondbacks a
sure.
couple of years ago. They win the National League pennant with a very modest record. And really, no one was looking at the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, that Phillies team that beat the Cardinals in 2022, to get back to what I was saying about September, go to Baseball Reference, anybody who's inclined, and look at their 2022 season game log and look at how they played. Look at their record in September. It was awful. And yet they get to the World Series. So you never know. Tony La Russa taught me that. And I believe he says, listen, man, when you're in the postseason, it's got nothing to do with the regular season. And what he called them, lightning bolts. One thing, everything can change with one lightning bolt. The Cardinals in 2006, game one of the World Series, heavy, heavy, heavy underdogs. And then came a lightning bolt. The lightning bolt was basically a no-name starting pitcher that had an ERA over 5 during the season. Anthony Reyes starting against Justin Verlander in game one and pitching the game of his life. Mm-hmm. That's a lightning bolt. That can completely annihilate every, you know, postseason expectation. The problem I have with the Cardinals, it isn't so much, first of all, you always aim to win the division. The Cardinals have been very fortunate because the NL Central hasn't been strong, of course. So they were getting away with it because they were just, well, all we got to do is win this division. It wasn't like winning the American League East, to your point. So they were content that even if, we win the division, hooray for us, but they didn't have as good a team as they could have put on the field, and that cost them a lot. And lately, the thing that has rubbed me and many others the wrong way, it wasn't even win the division anymore. It's like, well, with the expanded playoffs, and all you got to do is, even if you get in with a wild card, blah, 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 blah. When you start settling for like the third wild card, yeah, you're setting yourselves up for failure, and you're also kind of a fraud because it's just so easy to make the playoffs now.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, and as we know, this season has been a lot about runway and getting a look at younger players, and we are looking toward the future. Keith Law for The Athletic, he is somebody who looks at that very thing. He's always been paying attention to prospects around baseball and farm systems. We'll get Keith's thoughts on where the Cardinals stand in terms of the minor league system and get his thoughts on the most recent draft. Keith Law next on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM, KMOX, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, also by Anderson Hospital. Time to go to the guest line. It's Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji, and now we are joined by Keith Law, covering prospects, and he has been so good at this and been doing it for a very long time. Keith Law with The Athletic. He joins us now on KMOX. Good to have you on the Gas House Gang, Keith. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How about you?
We're doing okay, and from everything we have read, including your piece on the Cardinals and some of the other minor league teams or the other major league teams and how they've done in the amateur draft this past year, it's nice to hear that at least some of the picks you liked. Tell us what you did like about the Cardinals draft.
You're talking about specifically about this year's draft?
Yeah, we'll talk about this one, and then we'll talk about their system as a whole and where it is now.
Okay. So I particularly loved their first round pick, Liam Doyle, who I thought for a lot of the season was maybe the best prospect in the entire draft. I definitely think he was the top pitching prospect, high school or college, anywhere in the draft class. I know not everybody agrees with that, but I happen to think I saw him throw, I think it was 6 no-hit innings. It's an unhittable fastball that's frequently 97 to 99. He's got a really good splitter. I think he'll need some work on the breaking ball, but there's enough of a foundation there to see him as a three-pitch starter. The only real knock on him was kind of an unusual delivery, but I do worry about deliveries. I pay attention to mechanics. I don't have any serious concerns about his. And they backed it up with one of the more interesting high school bats in the class, Ryan Mitchell, he's played some infield. Nobody I know thinks he's going to be able to stay on the dirt. They think he's going to go to the outfield. Never strikes out. Incredible discipline for a high school hitter who's got some power now, has a chance to really grow into a lot of power, but at least you've got a really strong foundation there of feel to hit and control of the strike zone. And they had a couple other picks afterwards that I liked, but those two in particular, I thought they got two first rounders who were really good value for where they were selected.
Keith, Bernie Miklas, so good to talk to you again, and thanks for joining us today. I remember you. I read everything faithfully that you write, and I remember because I respect your knowledge on this, and also the fact you have never been afraid to go against the grain. You don't care what other prospect evaluators say and all that, and I admire that. You had, and this was preseason, you had the Cardinals, like, I think at number 14 in terms of your farm system rankings. I noticed with some of the other people that do this, the Cardinals in sort of the mid-season, late-season updates, it looked like their farm system rankings were moving way up, a couple places significantly up. And I'm wondering how you see that. Do you think that if Keith Law were to do rankings now, the Cardinals would be better than, say, 14th?
Oh, no question, because not only did they have a really strong draft, but they had a lot of guys take big steps forward this year. And they had a couple of guys take steps backwards, but it was more than mitigated by the number of guys who improved. And I think a lot of that is because they upgraded in player development kind of across the board. They brought in Rob Carfolio from Cleveland. He brought in a number of new people from Cleveland and other organizations, modernized a lot of their processes. And for the first time in a long time, you're seeing the Cardinals make pretty significant changes to their pitching prospects. unfortunately got hurt. But with Dakota Roby, they added two pitches to his arsenal that both made him quite a bit more effective, addressed some of the concerns about his ability to turn a lineup over multiple times, about his ability to get guys on both sides of the plate out. And, you know, unfortunately, he had to have Tommy John surgery. We hope he comes back 100%. But I do still look at the year kind of as a positive for him in the sense that he is a much more complete pitcher now, and I think an exemplar of what the Cardinals are trying to do with a lot of their pitching prospects, both guys they've had in the system already and now guys they're bringing in like Doyle. I have a lot more confidence that they're going to be able to find a third pitch, a real breaking ball, some sort of slider that particularly works for him and makes him a potential number two starter.
We have heard in the last year how the Cardinals farm system, they were so far behind in their development and the way they were going about business. And there have been some steps forward in that direction, we believe. But just how far of a distance do the Cardinals have to go to catch up with where other teams are in terms of their development and their minor league infrastructure?
I would have said, particularly on the pitching side, but this also applies to the position player side. They were certainly in the bottom third at a process level. So I'm not thinking so much about results like number of players they produced who had big league value, for example. I'm talking about, and this is a much more subjective and abstract thing, but their process for getting players into the system, working with amateur, international, pro scout, whichever group helped acquire that player, and then once they're in the system, integrating an approach that brings in analytics as well as the coaches to have sort of consistent messages and consistent plans for all of their players. Now, you're not going to give, it's not consistent in the sense, well, we're going to give every pitcher a kick change now. Every pitcher is different, and you've got to craft your plans for each individual player. And you do that by marrying the data that you're getting from your R&D department with the acumen of your coaches and sometimes the scouts who helped acquire those players. And I think the Cardinals previously, they particularly weren't integrating data. They weren't using the latest tools in terms of technology, and they weren't using, or at least up to speed with the majority of clubs in terms of integrating data with player development decisions. Now they are. And you're starting to see a lot of that. I think on the whole, if you look through all of the pitching prospects in the system, even some guys who are probably more fringy prospects, by and large, you saw improvements this year. Guys who took steps back, it was almost always due to injury, which unfortunately is part of the business. But you saw a lot of guys make improvements after years of stalling, right? There were a lot of years where I had Cardinals pitchers ranked pretty aggressively. So did other lists. And those guys didn't really pan out. I think the next generation, you're going to see a lot better results.
Keith Law is with us, baseball analyst from The Athletic. And Keith, you just already explained how the Cardinals' minor league system, their player development system, already has changed because of Heim Bloom and the people that he's brought in. But I want to kind of extend this because you know front offices. You're familiar with Heim Bloom. Heck, you worked in a front office yourself. What will Heim Bloom bring to the job, to the assignment, in terms of some stuff that has been missing from the Cardinals in terms of their front office operation in the recent past?
Well, I think you look at his experience, spent most of his career with the Rays, who remain at the very top of the game in terms of how they run their organization, the culture that they've developed, which really revolves around integrating, bringing people across departments together for decision-making and empowering a lot of their individual employees too. They're also a very scout-friendly organization, which the Cardinals still are, but the Cardinals, I think, had trended a little bit less so, particularly when Jeff Luhnow was there, because obviously we know he doesn't seem to care for scouts at all. So Heim's going to bring that approach, and he tried to bring it to Boston. I think if he'd been given more time there, and a little more support from ownership in terms of spending money, you might have seen some better results. But a lot of the improvements that have taken place in the Red Sox organization over the last 18 months, that's the fruit from the seeds that Heim planted while he was there. And I believe you will see a lot of that going forward with the Cardinals, where you're seeing like player development processes I described. They're also ramping up pro scouting. I know that they're looking to add on the pro scouting side, and that's good. We're seeing, there was a report the other day, the Twins fired 4 of their 5 pro scouts. They're basically dissolving the department. That is heading in the wrong direction. I know there's technology. I know there's video. I know there's data. That is not a substitute for in-person scouting. I will probably go to my grave saying that. But the Cardinals are aligned with me. They are still maintaining pro scouting and even ramping up on that side, and I think it will benefit them in the long run.
In terms of what they are doing and of the way they are approaching things now, if it's at a reasonable timeline, how long are we talking before we can really start to see results that they're doing it right at that level?
You should start seeing, I think you started seeing some results this year, guys who got to the big leagues, guys who took steps forward in the system. If you are talking about seeing more wins, fewer losses at the big league level, I think you will see some gradual improvement over the next year. And by 2 years from now, where college players drafted this year, like Doyle, should start impacting the major league club in 27, assuming we have a season in 27.
Right.
You'll start to see a lot more of that. Those guys have more of an impact on the major league club that year. What I'm particularly curious about is some of the guys who've stalled, right? They actually got progress this year from Liberatore, who I had almost given up on, despite being very high in him when he was a prospect. Nolan Gorman has not progressed. Jordan Walker, obviously one of the bigger mysteries, I think, of failed prospects in the last few years. Can the new group salvage something from those guys, or do we just have to turn that part of the roster over entirely and let the next wave come through? And that's really going to impact the timeline, right? If they can get something out of the guys that the previous overall regime wasn't able to, it accelerates the team's push to get back to contention. And they haven't been far off this year, so it's not like they need to make a quantum improvement like the White Sox to get back into playoff contention.
Keith Law, and I know from my years covering the White Sox, you have very rarely liked anything they've done, and I fully understand why. And we're going back years. Keith Law, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for visiting with us today on the Gas House Gang. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Keith Law covers baseball, and he is a longtime baseball writer. Very, very good when it comes to looking at minor league systems around the game, and it's good to hear that he believes the Cardinals are headed in the right direction. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang from MLB Network Radio. We will talk the upcoming postseason. We'll talk about the Cardinals and more with Mike Farron next on KMOX.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling and by Anderson Hospital on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM. I'm glad that you are part of our afternoon and thank you for making us part of yours. We talk baseball, we talk Cardinals and more on this show, and we go back to the guest line today, and we welcome in from MLB Network Radio, Mike Farron, joining us now on the show. Mike, how's it going?
I'm good, Chris. Bernie, has Chris stopped complaining about how the officials screwed the Bears in the first game of the season, or is he still whining about it?
Mike, I think he whined in my presence maybe one time, but yeah. I'm sure there have been about 50 other times since then.
Yeah.
Come on, we went through the six stages of grief that Monday night as he's complaining about the officials, and I was like, okay, well, what's next is like the GM or the coach, and that, of course, like that. Now it's on to the GM. Like, this is all standard, right? We all just have to understand the Bears aren't very good, Chris. Like,
well,
that's
okay.
And they're not going to be good.
I mean, probably not. Probably not, but I also blame the refs for them losing by 31 to the Lions. So, yeah, it's got to be the officiating.
Automated referees. Sorry. Yeah. That was all.
In the Central Division, the National League Central, Mike, there are two teams that have clinched their playoff spots. The Brewers are in, and they are very likely to win the division. The Cubs are also in. So of those two teams, if you look ahead, we don't know exactly what the matchups are going to be, but it's very likely the Cubs are going to be that wild card team. Which one's the most dangerous of those two?
I mean, I think you have to give an edge to Milwaukee just for, if not any other reason, the bye plays, I think, a big factor in that. It's one less round that you have to go through, and I think that's important. There are fewer chances for you to lose, right, and to get knocked out of the playoffs by not having to go through that three-game round. So I would say that. There are a couple other things I think Milwaukee does really well. They don't swing at pitches outside the strike zone. Like, that's their philosophy. There was a great story earlier this year when they acquired Andrew Vaughn that they basically told him, like, swing at strikes or you're not going to play here. And he got the message. And they have one of the lowest chase rates of any team in baseball from their offense. I think that's really important when you're facing outside pitching in playoffs. They also have guys that miss bats. And I think that that's really important. And then they play good defense. They make smart base running decisions. It's not just stolen bases. It's going first to third. It's going second to home. They're aggressive when they need to be. They will take some chances, but they're not going to be thoroughly risky. So I think from an overall standpoint, it's a roster that's built fairly well. And they've hit for power over the last 2 months, which is the last component, because power absolutely matters in the playoffs. So I think they're probably a little bit more dangerous, especially if the Cubs, you know, have any question about the availability of Kyle Tucker for the postseason. You know, their bullpen, I think, is better than people give them credit for. But their rotation, while it has been very good this season, is not one that is going to get a whole lot of swing and miss. And I think that that can be exposed in the playoffs. They play great defense. The offense has been inconsistent for the last couple of months. And so those are the things that I would have that are greater concerns with the Cubs. But, I mean, again, like, I think we're looking at, listen, the Dodgers are going to be the best roster in the postseason. The beauty of baseball's playoffs is the best roster doesn't always win.
Mike, I wanted to follow up on that and not talk so much about the Brewers because you did a great job of breaking them down. But if we look at the likely postseason field, and I know it's not set yet, but when we talk about the things that generally speaking serve a team well in postseason baseball, and we also know that there's a lot of randomness. It just the regular season doesn't predict what's going to happen in the postseason. And it sort of drives me a little nuts that people don't seem to realize that enough. But anyway,
right.
In terms of the way a team is set up, who fits a profile that you would at least like as a strong postseason team? Maybe one that can win the pennant or go all the way.
Yeah, I love the way you phrase that, Bernie, because I think that's the way that I kind of view it, right? Is who does the things that I think are successful in the postseason based on what we know about what's been successful in the past? And I think to that point, Milwaukee, because the power has come on in the second half, does more fit that mold. So they are one of the teams that I like. I think the Dodgers fit that mold because of the overall talent level. I think their offense, while it has been a little bit more chasey this year than it has been in previous years, and like Max Muncy is really the rug that tied the room together for them, in that he just does not go outside the strike zone. He's such a tough at bat, and he really lengthens out their lineup. So I think they're another team that is dangerous. I think in the American League, Seattle has the best roster. And what's funny about this is that they're actually a team that chases quite a bit, right? But they hit for power. I think it would surprise people to know that they're in the top 10 in the majors in runs scored, playing half their games at T-Mobile Park. Their starting pitching actually hasn't been as good as their reputation this year, but their relievers have been excellent, and their relievers miss bats. Their starters miss bats. I think it's a little bit less on the offensive and defensive profile for them. I think they make the routine play okay. Defensively, they have a great defender in center field, and if they can play Robles, Rosarena, and Rodriguez in the outfield together, it's pretty good. Rosarena is the weakest defender, but he's kind of more average-ish than below average in left. So I think that there are some elements there that are really good for Seattle, but trying to pick which team I like best in the American League is left trying to pick which jelly belly you want after everybody else has picked through them. They all kind of taste like that gross watermelon.
Or that butter one, the one that's buttered popcorn or whatever that flavor
buttered
is.
Popcorn. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's, you nailed it. That's exactly what it is.
That thing is disgusting. Talking with Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio here on KMOX. For the Cardinals, Wilson Contreras, his season is over, and that was the third season that he's had. He's got the injury. He's been placed on the injured list, so he's going to be done for 2025. How do you look at his tenure in St. Louis over these first three seasons?
I think from a production standpoint, he's given them what you can expect offensively. I mean, he has been a little bit streaky, but for the most part, he's been a competent power hitter and given them some right-handed juice while missing some time with injury. I think looking at it from the moment that he was signed, to, you know, really the time that he went on the IL, it's been deeply weird, right? Like, they signed a guy who had massive defensive questions to replace one of the great defensive catchers of all time, and then wondered why things weren't going well defensively. And so, and like, that's not on Wilson Contreras, right? Like, that's on the evaluation. So I think it's been strange, but from a production standpoint, I think he's been just fine. And I think you can win with him as your first baseman offensively. I don't know that I love the idea of him hitting fourth in a championship lineup, but hitting sixth, I think he's a really good option. And so the question is, can the Cardinals build enough offense around him in these next 2 years to be able to take advantage of that? It's really tough to find good first base production. Teams have devalued first base production. They really have, because I think because it's so far down on the defensive spectrum that they would just take their chances on guys who maybe have been productive in the minor leagues, who can replicate 90% of what you would get or close to league average, and catch the ball over there, then really go out and spend at the top of the market to be able to fill that position. So I think they're in a good spot with him there, and I think he's productive enough. It's just getting to this point, like up until basically spring training this year, was beyond bizarre in my mind.
Mike, you complimented me the way I phrased a question, so I got to return the compliment, because thank you, because you absolutely nailed it about Wilson Contreras. It frustrates me to no end. Here in St. Louis, there seems to be a segment of the fan base that doesn't like the guy. And one of the things they say is, like, he's not a cleanup hitter. So, you know, if they can trade him, they should move him. He's not a cleanup hitter. They're missing the point entirely. To your point, because I keep tabs on this, since he signed with the Cardinals, based on weighted runs created plus, he's the ninth best right-handed hitter in baseball. The problem isn't his performance, and he was a damn good first baseman this year. The problem is they need someone to bat fourth, and if he bats sixth, no one's whining about, well, he's not a leadoff hitter. He's taking the spot right. Because they don't have anybody better. That's the point.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's kind of what the way I kind of view the Cardinals overall, right, is that, like, listen, they have a lot of really good complementary pieces. We had Brendan Donovan on our show this morning. We were talking to him a little bit about this. And the guys that have performed well, the young guys this year, right? Victor Scott may not have any power. I mean, I woke up this morning and noticed that he's slugging under 300, which is strange, but he is a really good defender in center field. And I do think there's a little bit more in the tank offensively. He has shown some flashes of it in the past, but I don't think he's going to be a great offensive player. He's just a really great defender who can steal some bases and hit ninth. Mason Wynn looks like an everyday shortstop who's capable of winning Gold Glove awards. Again, complimentary piece, but a really important complimentary piece. Ivan Herrera, I think, quietly has had the best season of any Cardinal player. Nobody nationally is talking about him. He has answered the question of who is that, I guess, second right-handed bat that you would have in the lineup, right? So I know I said we would hit Contreras potentially sixth, but like, he and Herrera are pretty similar. And regardless of where you put them, I think you have good players there. Pajas has done a really nice job behind the plate, right? So, like, we've got some of these answers. And then Burleson is obviously part of the solution in whatever role it is. Donovan, you know, I knew he's getting closer to free agency, so maybe they revisit trade talks this winter, but he's a very valuable player because he doesn't do anything great, but he does everything well. So there's a lot that I like about their offensive core, but they don't have the aircraft carrier. They need Kyle Tucker. Mm-hmm. Is what they need, right? Like, that's they need the guy who is the guy in the middle of the lineup. And the question is, as they go into free agency this year, how do they address that? Because they really need someone who they can build around in the middle. I'm sure the hope 3 years ago was that was going to be Jordan Walker. I don't think it's going to be Jordan Walker. He may still have a very good big league career, but man, he's had a lot of voices in his head. You know, I love the interview you guys did with Brant Brown a couple weeks ago talking about that. But maybe he figures it out next year, but I don't view him as being the guy that's going to carry them. They need that player, and I don't think that they have him in the organization. I think J.J. Weatherholt's going to be a dude. I think he's going to be a capital D dude, but I don't think he's that guy that carries the offense.
Mike Farron, I think it's always great to talk baseball with you, and I would love for you to just tell us that everything is going to be okay, and everything is going to be okay quickly. So as we let you go, can you tell us that and be honest?
Is everything going to be okay quickly?
Relatively
and
quickly.
That's tough. I think, and you can... Can they be a postseason team a year from now? Yeah, because the bar's not very high to get to the postseason. You're finishing the top 40% of the league. So if ownership is willing to invest in the product, and they've certainly shown that willingness in the past, then yeah, I think that they can get in there. I think there are enough good pieces on that roster that you can build around it. You just, what they need is they have all the complementary pieces they need, the stars. And they have done a good job over the last 20 years of going outside the organization, generally via trade, to acquire those guys. It may have to dip into free agency this time to do it.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Mike Farron declares now the Cardinals will make it to the postseason in 2026. Thank you, Mike.
That's what you said. Check back with me in a year and let's see how that went. Age. So.
Thank you. Mike Farron, you're the best. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Always great talking ball with you, too. Take care.
Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio. He's great.
I'm sorry. I was so excited because I thought it was such a great guest. He's fantastic. He really is. And he gets it. And I have a special appreciation for people like that. You know, he gets it. I mean, that's a great compliment in this culture. Yep. That's a great compliment to throw out.
Hey, we should do more compliments, Bernie, just in general,
yeah.
All of us.
Yeah, right.
I think you're doing great.
Well, Ranj, it's a privilege to work with you because you're so excellent at what you do.
My guy. Right? Thanks, man. You're the best. That's Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, also by Anderson Hospital. Bernie and Ranji with you till 1 o'clock on KMOX. Gas House Gang, 104.1 FM, KMOX, noon to 1 every weekday. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji on Thursday. Don't forget that Ollie Marmol's with us on Tuesdays. He joins the show at 12 o'clock. Before we wrapped up today, Bernie, wanted to quickly get your thoughts. The number 23 Missouri Tigers this weekend. It is their first SEC game against South Carolina in Columbia. It's a fun matchup happening Saturday night.
Yeah, it's a great event for Mizzou. It's a big-time event for Mizzou because this is only the fourth Saturday night home game they've had since joining the SEC in 2012. And Mizzou has quietly become one of the best home field advantage teams in the nation. That's no hype. I mean, the last 3 years, they've lost one home game. And there's only like three or four teams that have done better than that. And look, I know all eyes are on whether Lenoris Sellers, who is a big play quarterback for South Carolina, erratic, but he's a big play guy, whether he'll play or not. The betting line reveals that at least the smart money thinks that he'll play, because at one point this week, the line was Mizzou is a 13.5 point favorite. Now it's down to 10.5. But I think Mizzou's got all that they need to win that game, even if Norris Sellers plays. I mean, Vanderbilt wiped out in South Carolina last week at South Carolina's home field. And I think Vandy and Mizzou are you know, very similar in a lot of ways. And Vandy's really good, and Mizzou's really good. So I look for Mizzou to take care of business. They are still kind of an underrated team nationally, because their resume since 2003 has been great. And yet they didn't even enter this season as a top 25 team, which was absolutely ludicrous. But that fuels them, and so that's a good thing. But Mizzou should be able to – Mizzou is so strong in every area. And I know the schedule has been weak, but you know what? All Power Four conference teams, the first three games or so, usually play one decent team, one really bad team, and one kind of FBS team that's not great. It's kind of like okay. Mizzou's schedule is no different than anyone else's. So anyway, I like Mizzou big in this one, and I know the Fighting Illini go to Indiana, and that's a really big game. That should be a fun game.
Yep. The Fighting Illini, top 10, number 9 in the country. They'll be in Bloomington. I know Tom Ackerman right now is so nervous I guarantee you he's not going to be able to sleep for the next couple of days because that one is huge. So to see Illinois a top 10 team, Bernie, I know we got to wrap up here in a few seconds, but it's a very cool thing to have both of these teams on both sides of the river actually matter at the moment.
You know, and I'm one of those irritating people that I don't pay a lot of attention to the polls, but I do pay attention to Bill Connolly's SP plus rankings. Mm-hmm. He's great. He's got Mizzou this week at number 11 and Illinois at number 16, but they're both really good teams, and that's the takeaway from that. His system thinks highly of both of those teams.
All right, Bernie, love it. We'll do it again next week. We'll have Ali Marmol on Tuesday, and I know you'll be around the station quite a bit over the next couple of days as well. Thanks, man.
All right, brother. Take care.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, the Gas House Gang. If you missed the show or any part of it, you want to go back and get it, Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts, or you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter at KMOX Sports. Dave Glover's show is next on 104.1 FM KMOX.